Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Happy Wednesday, football fans, and welcome into another edition of the Pro Football Chase Podcast. I'm Isaac Sines, and I thank you for joining me. In today's episode, NFL defensive tackle Jarrell Worthy and I recap Week 4 and preview Thursday night's clash between the Rams and Seahawks. We also discuss various other topics, including Vontaze Burfict's suspension, Gardner Minshew's hot start, and the Falcons' early struggles. Plus, we'll give our game picks for Week 5. But before we dive into a new episode, let's take a listen to some of the top scoring plays from Week 4.
20 yards on 3rd and 6, end zone, touchdown, Allison again. Certainly to Sanders, it helps him. Here he is, swinging out. Howard will walk in for the touchdown.
Good time.
And the throw, and he's got him. Waller, touchdown.
Fake to him over the middle, and he is caught. That's the rookie, A.J. Brown. He's still going. Brown showing the wheels to the 10 to the 5. And he's in for the touchdown.
The interception. Wide open. And into the end zone is Dalvin Jr.
32. Rosen looking underneath. Up there.
The outside's got a man wide open. Touchdown, Dolphins.
After an 18-yard touchdown pass, it's an end around. It goes off to Trevor Davis with a blocker ahead. He's got Miller. He got a block for Waller. He's going to take it in for the touchdown.
This is the Pro Football Chase Podcast, a podcast that has featured interviews with Rams wide receiver Robert Woods.
3,000 yards, and, you know, last year, unfortunately, I got hurt midway in the season, but other than that, just working and grinding to get to this point, and finally broke it with a lot of games left.
Packers wide receiver Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
Just the fact that we got a, you know, all-pro on the other side of the ball, and Devontae. So when you got a guy like that, you know, that's who's going to get the main focus. Obviously, you know, people start to know my name a little bit after I made a few plays here and there.
Broncos offensive guard Ronald Leary.
It would either have to be a counter or pin and pull play when we get on the edge and run. I think it's always impressive when big guys can get out that stance and move and hit somebody. So.
And rising stars Dalton Risner, Charles Amenahu, and Jawan Williams. This is a podcast that offers player perspectives from some well-decorated veterans, including T.J. Houshmandzadeh.
And people will say, oh, well, is Dak Prescott a franchise quarterback? Look at his record. It tells you he is. Oh, he has a great defense. He has Ezekiel Elliott. You tell me a quarterback in the entire NFL that's not Tom Brady that does more with less.
Game previews, recaps, and analysis. Turn the volume up. The chase is on, and the chase is live. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome into the Pro Football Chase Podcast. It's Isaac Sines with you, and joining me yet again is my co-host, Jarrell Worthy. So we're getting ready for week number 5 already in the NFL season, so things are going really quick. We're already in October. So Jarrell, how you doing this morning, and how excited are you to preview some more football games?
Extremely excited this morning. Thank you again for allowing me to be on the show. It's a great opportunity to be able to talk about some football, man. We got some interesting storylines, a lot of good stuff to cover today, so let's get to it, man.
All right, sounds like a plan. So this week I want to do something different. So under the radar players of week number four, we typically will give our players of the week, but I feel like there's so many players, and of course this makes this exercise a little bit difficult for us, Jarrell, because there's so many players to choose from that have done the dirty work, so to speak, to help their team get a win in week four. So I'll go ahead and get things started here. We'll each pick an offense and defensive player for under the radar and underappreciated players. So mine for offense, I got to go with Chiefs running back Daryl Williams. Daryl Williams, he was an undrafted free agent out of LSU in 2018. He stayed patient, worked hard. He was at the bottom of the depth chart last season. And then, of course, this season, they have Damian Williams. They signed LeSean McCoy. But Damian Williams has been hurt the last couple of weeks. And Daryl Williams' stat line doesn't look all that pretty, Jarrell, when you look at it from Sunday. But what he did do was he scored touchdowns and helped convert a big fourth down. And he capped it off with a one-yard touchdown run. He had two touchdowns, again, 13 rush yards on eight carries, so no, not the best yards per carry average, but he also came through with three receptions for 43 yards on Sunday, so Daryl Williams is my under-the-radar player on offense.
All right, all right. I like your pick, Isaac, man. I'm going to go with a guy everybody kind of knows, but hasn't been getting as much appreciation this year. I would go with Leonard Fournette, the first round pick out of LSU. Everybody's been on the Gardner Minshew train. Everybody's had their opinions about the play, and it's been spectacular. I mean, he's having some phenomenal moments when given his opportunity to shine, and he's having this Jaguars team believing that they can substantially make a run at the playoffs. And so, you know, obviously there's a great understanding there with their offense, but Leonard Fournette and what he's been able to do over the last few weeks with everything that's been surrounding Gardner Minshew, he said he comes into work. He had over 200 yards rushing last week, had a big 80-yard run that helped propel those guys into a scoring situation. With all the hype that's surrounding the guy out of Washington State, man, it's been Leonard Fournette hasn't really been talked about as much, and the consistency he's been playing with this year, and having the sixth-ranked rushing offense and consistently being available week in and week out. Unlike last year, it's been a very steady rushing attack for this Jaguars offense this year. And, so Leonard Fournette is my offensive player that's under the radar.
Yeah, I appreciate that pick a lot because I don't know if you saw that Thursday night game, Jacksonville and Tennessee, and Fournette was absolutely bottled up. He had nowhere to run. And leading up to, I think, 5 minutes left in the fourth, he was averaging like 1.3 yards per carry just because there was nothing there. And, of course, I think he broke away with a 25-yard run. And so it made his stats look a little bit better. I have respect for a guy like that who keeps on working hard. He doesn't complain. He doesn't go to the media. He doesn't throw his offensive line under the bus. He keeps working hard, churning his legs, and comes through with a huge game for the Jaguars, as you mentioned. So I like that pick a lot, and I have a lot of respect for Leonard Fournette. Now, defensive player, Jarrell, I have Bears linebacker Nick Kwiatkowski. I think that's how you say it. Kwiatkowski is a former 2016 fourth-round pick out of West Virginia, and he showed up to play on Sunday in the Windy City against the Minnesota Vikings. And one of the things with him was Roquan Smith, the first-round pick for Chicago, was a surprise inactive. And so Kwiatkowski, about 90 minutes before game time, that's when he learned he was going to be filling in as a starting linebacker. He's not the most athletic. He's not the flashiest, but he got the job done. 9 total tackles, 8 solo, 2 tackles for loss, 1 quarterback hit, 1 sack, and 1 forced fumble against Minnesota. So he for sure was under the radar, but he was a big part in Chicago's dominant performance on Sunday.
See, Isaac, that's why you're one of the coolest guys on the earth, because we each have the same type of mindset, the same type of thinking. Although I'm going to go with the Bears defense, I'm going to go with a different player on the Bears defense. I'm going to go with Nick Williams, the defensive lineman out of Samford. He stepped in for Akeem Hicks, who was injured last week, had the opportunity to join that vicious defense in the starting role. He was able to have 7 total tackles. He had 2 sacks against the Minnesota Vikings in 2 crucial situations. And there was an opportunity for him to go in there and make some big plays, man. He had 2 TFLs, and he was able to go out there and position himself to be really, really and really substantial in his opportunity to be in the starting role. With Nick Williams and what he was able to do, filling in for Akeem Hicks, man, he is my defensive player flying under the radar.
That's a good pick right there, Nick Williams. I did see him quite a bit, causing some disturbances against Minnesota. So now we have that done. Let's go ahead and move to our fact fiction segment, which is something that we debuted last week, Jarrell. So the big topic right now, really all this week, and there's been an outrage with some NFL players, so I'm going to be interested to see how you view it and where you stand on this. But Vontaze Burfict, the Raiders linebacker, we know he has a track record. I think he was penalized and fined 13 other times before Sunday's hit on Jack Doyle. Now, if you didn't see it, you can check it out. It's all over social media. Jack Doyle caught a pass over the middle. His knee was down, and Vontaze Burfict came and hit him helmet to helmet. That caused the refs to call a personal unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which then had Burfict ejected from the game. The NFL announced the ruling that he is suspended for the remainder of the season, so he is done after that play on Sunday. So here's the statement, and we'll say whether we believe it's fact or fiction. So here it is. A season-long suspension for Vontaze Burfict is overdone.
I believe that it is fact, solely off the basis of the play. I understand that you know, the history of and the track record that Vontaze Burfict has. I believe that, you know, if you're going to suspend a guy in that situation, you know, obviously because of his previous track record, 8 to 10 games would have been suffice. But when I look at the nature of the play, you have a player going down to the knee that has an opportunity to get up and run after catching the football. I have a big 6'4 and 250, 60-pound linebacker coming in to make a play, as well as a defensive back who's also lowering his head to come in to make a play. And then you have Jack Doyle, who's curling himself up, you know, obviously to protect himself. But given the angle in which he was at, Vontaze Burfict has, you know, how low can you expect a player to go? I think at the end of the day, you know, you want to suspend him because of his track record, and obviously you want to suspend him because of the nature and not having the respect for the players after the hit. I think, you know, Vontaze Burfict is a tremendous player. I think that at the end of the day, if he was playing in a different era, a lot of his antics and the way that he plays would be acceptable unto the league. But, you know, obviously times have changed, and, you know, the rules of the game have changed. And so I think that with that opportunity, I think that he needs to become more remorseful. But an 8 to 10 game suspension, I think, would have been suffice as opposed to the entire season after only being week 4.
That's a fact. I think the season-long suspension is well overdone. As mentioned, he's already gotten 13 suspensions and fines in 7 seasons when he was with the Cincinnati Bengals before he signed with the Raiders. 2 of the suspensions were for illegal hits, totaling 6 games. And so I understand, I do not condone those actions nor his track record, but I agree with you, Drill. You said something that strikes a chord with me, was that had he been playing in the 80s or 90s, all these things, all these hits that he's been doing, he would have been completely part of the norm there. And I understand that he hasn't gone the best way about it with his antics and his smiling and his waving at the crowd on his way out of the game. So I understand that there is some serious red flags when it comes to that. But nonetheless, a season-long suspension for Vontaze Burfict, I believe, is truly erratic on the NFL's portion, considering the other helmet-to-helmet plays that have come up in this regular season where neither of those other players have gotten suspended. I look at Derek Barnett from the Eagles, who had that late hit on Jamal Williams last Thursday night that had him stretched off the field. I don't even think he got fined for that. And so I'm thinking, where's the rules and regulations? How is the NFL going to be able to not suspend or even fine a guy like that for that late hit, but then all of a sudden strike a season-long suspension for Vontaze Burfict? And then that's just one part of my argument, Jarrell. And I won't go into to full detail, but I think you and I both know that there's been some other players that have had a track record of domestic violence, okay, that haven't had a season-long suspension and are still getting second chances in the NFL today. So when you compare both circumstances, Vontaze Burfict being an on-field action and other players being an off-the-field action, I just don't think it's justifiable.
Absolutely, Isaac. I would just agree with you in the sense that the NFL handles situations completely different, and it's really a sliding scale when it comes to every situation. You know, when it comes to a person's personality, you know, that the NFL deems unworthy, they will seem to come down in a more harsh way than guys that can potentially bring money and revenue to the NFL as a brand. You know, when you have a guy like Tariq Hill, you have a guy like Kareem Hunt. These guys score multiple touchdowns every year. They're going to have opportunity to be in Pro Bowls for a very long time, given their talent and their ability to score touchdowns. And so, when you have situations like that, and you also have NFL executives, having DUIs, you have owners of teams soliciting for their own benefit, and then you have other owners and executives having things done within the organization that's definitely not deemed worthy, and not having them have the proper punishment come down on them, you'll see a 2-3 game suspension when there are situations where people's lives are at stake. Having a general manager driving under the influence, having a coach doing cocaine before giving the team speeches is well out of line, but these guys still have opportunities at their careers. And when you see a guy that just continues to play hard but necessarily doesn't want to fall to the rules of the NFL, being put on the shelf and trying to basically being blackballed in a sense, I definitely don't think it's a great situation.
I feel like there's all kinds of flaws when it comes to the NFL and their discipline, and this is not the first mishap. I think there's been plenty other incidents that the NFL has mishandled, and I just don't think it's right, to put a player out for the entire season. Don't get me wrong. I'm not here condoning what he does, and I do believe that maybe there is some malicious acts to some of these hits that he's put on players, but nonetheless, it is a football play, and as I mentioned as part of my supporting argument was there's players that have had issues with domestic violence and other incidents that are far more serious, and yet again, they're in the league and they're having the chance to play. So both of us are in agreement that season-long suspension was a little bit overdone on the NFL's standpoint. But we'll now move on to the next fact or fiction statement. And this one is a little bit of a surprise because I don't think either of us were expecting to be talking about this team or head coach in this regard. But here it is. Falcons head coach Dan Quinn deserves to be on the hot seat after an underwhelming 1-3 start. Is that a fact or a fiction?
I would have to say it's a fact, Isaac. When you look at this team's performance over the first four games, it's been extremely underwhelming. They're 22nd in defense, and points per game. They're giving up 25 points per game. They're 25th in sacks. They only have 5 sacks throughout 4 games. And they've only had their hands on the ball twice. Having a defensive minded coach in Dan Quinn, and you having your defense contribute this type of performance, I think that he definitely deserves to be on the hot seat, but also on the offensive end, they're trying to make Matt Ryan be a Tom Brady, and he's just not that type of player. He's just not that type of guy. When you have opportunities to have a great balance, Matt Ryan can give you, some phenomenal games. When they went to the Super Bowl, they were averaging over 115 yards a game. Devontae Freeman and Terrence Coleman, they were doing what they needed to do in order for that offense to be successful, and there was a proper balance there this team now is averaging under 70 yards per game rushing, and they're trying to put the ball in the hands of Matt Ryan. And, you know, he's continuously making mistakes in crucial situations. And so I think this this team definitely needs to look themselves in the mirror, and Coach Quinn needs to look himself in the mirror as well. And because he has the ability to lead these guys to a successful season, but they're going to have to turn it around, and they're going to have to turn it around defensively and running the football.
I say fact as well. I did not see a 1-3 start coming from a talented Falcons team, and not even after that opening day no-show in Minneapolis, in which they got crushed 28-12. They bounced back by beating an injury-plagued Eagles team on Sunday Night Football 24-20. But since then, they dropped their last two games to Indianapolis 27-24 and Tennessee at home 24-10. And the stats, they might not look completely awful, as you mentioned. They are 10th in the NFL in yards, 9th in yards allowed, but they are misleading because they have been outscored, Jarrell, 65-10 in the first halves of their three losses this season. So their opposition really hasn't had to risk much in the second half due to their big leads. And how about this stat? The Falcons are 19-20. Since winning the NFC title in January of 2017, and they're 8-12 over the past two seasons. They're now alone in last place in the NFC South, and so I do believe that Dan Quinn deserves to be on the hot seat considering all the talent he has surrounding him. He's a defensive-minded head coach, but yet it falls on his shoulders for not getting the right coordinators in place, and I do believe that there is starting to be a little bit of momentum growing towards the Falcons making a head coaching change in the near future if things don't turn around.
Yes, sir. I do believe that they're going to have to make some changes if this continues to happen. They just extended him, and they just extended the general manager, so they're going to be in a tough position to eat that money up if they have to make a sudden change towards the end of the season. But I think the Falcons are in a position to be able to bounce back from this. They have the pieces in place. We're not looking at a debacle last year where there was just injuries all over the place. Now, there's guys available for them to be able to contribute. There's familiar faces in that organization that's had success before. Offensively, they have to figure out a way to get Devontae Freeman going. Like, he needs to average 18 to 20 carries a game to be able to give this offense a balance, and as well as defensively, they have to create some turnovers, man, and they have to get to the quarterback. Their pass rushing attack isn't, you know, the guys aren't really, I would have to say they're not really as fearful of these guys up front, and which they have been in the past. And so Atlanta is definitely going to have to turn it around.
All right, let's go to the next statement here. We're going to stay in the NFC. We're going to talk about your boy who you went to college with, and we talked a little bit about him last week and his struggles. Kirk Cousins put another dud performance out there. Now, granted, it wasn't all on him. He struggled as far as just running for his life. That Bears defensive front was in his face the entire game. But here's a statement, Jarrell. Kirk Cousins' ineffective play against winning teams will keep Minnesota out of the playoff picture in a competitive NFC this season. I'll go ahead and give my take first, and I'll toss it to you. I'll say fact on my end. Cousins and the Vikings are 2-2 this year, and they're 10-9-1 since signing Cousins to that three-year, fully guaranteed $84 million deal in the offseason. We know Minnesota, they lost 16-6 on Sunday against the Bears, and Cousins is now 4-27 against opponents with winning records. That is just absolutely atrocious, and as I said, it's not all on him because, I mean, there's pressure in his face consistently, but when you're getting paid that much money and being a quarterback in the NFL, that's what it comes with. You have to shoulder the blame, and he is simply not getting the job done. Cousins has completed a grand total of 23 passes for 272 yards in both of their wins this season because Dalvin Cook has been running the ball very effectively. But when it comes to facing high-quality opponents, Cousins has just not been there. His passer rating in wins is 122.0, and it's 73.4 in the two losses this season, Jarrell. So I just believe that Kirk Cousins and his inability to show up and show out on the biggest stages is going to keep Minnesota from getting into the playoffs this season despite their strong defense.
I would have to agree with you, Isaac. Unfortunately, for my boy Kirk, he definitely hasn't been living up to the contract that he received a couple years ago. Let's take a look at some stats here. When Case Keenum was the quarterback, when they in 2017, they averaged 23 points per game. They had over 350 yards per game as a total offense. They were the 11th ranked offense. Right now, they're the 31st offense in passing. They've only had two plays of plus 40 yards, and their average passer rating is 88.6. And so their defense is ranked sixth in the league, man, and they're continuing to make strides defensively. But Kirk Cousins' inability to make the throws down the field, you know, whether it's timing or whether it's reading coverages or having the opportunity to make plays with his feet, it's just it hasn't been working out for him. I think this defense and this offense has given this team some confidence. But, you know, Kurt's going to have to make some changes on his end, and we're going to have to get in the film room and figure out which ways we're going to have to work in order for this team to be successful. They have, you know, continued playmakers on the outside. They have guys that's been in crucial situations in order for this team to make plays. I mean, that's in order for this team to make plays. And so Kurt's going to have to pick it up on his end. Only having two plays over 40 yards and over, you know, with having four games already, I think that's definitely underwhelming. And so he's going to have to, you know, look himself in the mirror, just like the Atlanta Falcons, and they're going to have to figure out a way to get it together, man, because there's opportunities for this team to push forward in this division as well as in this conference.
They have way too much talent out there with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and a rebuilt, rekindled offensive line and Dalvin Cook. They have way too much on that team for it to go to waste. So Kirk Cousins definitely needs to increase his play, and they need answers in Minnesota, and they need it fast, because I could tell that their fan base is starting to get very impatient with Kirk Cousins. So we'll go to the final statement of the fact fiction segment this week, and it goes to the AFC South. Gardner Minshew, the talk of the NFL the last couple of weeks. So here is the statement. The Jaguars should be considered the favorites in the AFC South with the emergence of Gardner Minshew and their stout defense. Fact or fiction?
I would have to say fact. When I look at their schedule down the stretch, they have tough games when it comes to the Saints and the Texans, but they have those guys at home. They have the Colts after coming off a Week 10 bye. They also have the Buccaneers and Chargers at home. Those are all winnable games I see for this team. Gardner Minshew's given them the opportunity to be able to have the ball late in the game and make some plays with his feet, whether it's down the field running or whether it's a pump fake and he's scrambling for a first down. But the rushing attack of this offense is what really gives me the confidence that this team can really go far. Being able to control the ball in crucial situations, especially against teams like the Texans, teams like the Saints and Buccaneers and Chargers, who can put points on the board, that running game is going to be extremely important for this team in order for this team to be successful. But, you know, having all these tough teams at home, as well as having a Week 10 bye that's late in the year where you can have an opportunity to get your legs back before going on the road to a divisional opponent, I think that it's going to play a very important role for this Jags team. Their defense is sitting kind of average for me right now. They're going to have to continue to make improvements in order for me to start believing in them. I just think that, you know, they've been having too many holes defensively through the first four games with guys that they've had success with in the past. But if they can pick some things up on the defensive end and turn one of those games that they had against Tennessee a few weeks ago into a reoccurring thing, then I think that this team can, the sky's the limit for this team.
I'm going to say fiction. I agree with all the points you said, but I think at this point I have more confidence in the Indianapolis Colts and what they can do. I know they're coming off a disappointing loss to the Oakland Raiders, in which I thought for sure they were going to be able to pull that one out. But when you look at their team, they have battled injuries, as every other team has, right? So that cannot be a sole excuse for Indianapolis. But They're down Darius Leonard, their best defender with concussion for the second consecutive week. T.Y. Hilton has been sidelined with the quad. And then Malik Hooker, who suffered a torn meniscus a couple of weeks ago, was playing the best football of his young career. And so I still believe in Jacoby Brissett. He's thrown for 911 yards, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 65.2 completion percentage. And you talked about Jacksonville's ability to run the football. Well, Indianapolis can do that as well with their stout offensive line led by Quentin Nelson, Anthony Costanzo, and their ability to win at the point of attack to go with Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines. And, of course, don't forget that two tight end set with Eric Ebron and Jack Doyle. So I do believe that Frank Reich will get this Indianapolis team back on track once they get some of these key players back. And I still think at this point, while I still think Houston has some life in them, and this division is anybody's at this point, everybody's 2-2, including the Tennessee Titans, I just would ride with the Colts over the Jaguars at this time.
Man, you make some compelling arguments. I think the only thing that would be the difference maker for me is having already beaten the Texans, you having them at home again, going to Indianapolis after a bye week, you basically having 2 weeks to prepare for a team, and also getting Indianapolis at home in week 17. I think that is very important for this division. And, you know, the Jaguars are definitely riding high right now. And so I think this defense is going to find ways to continue to improve. And there's going to be opportunities for Minshew to lead this team down the stretch. And if there's any opportunity for Nick Foles to come back and kind of get into the fold, you know how he always likes to show up in the nick of time for the yeah. team to be successful. So, you know, you never know what this team is capable of, man. Once you get a couple wins under your belt, especially with this Saints game approaching, if they have opportunity to squeak this out and win that game, I think this is definitely going to bode well for their confidence level. And so this team is going to be scary coming down the stretch, man, if they can put a few wins together.
That's for sure. There's a lot of intrigue there in Jacksonville, including the whole Jalen Ramsey hoopla and whether he's going to be traded or not. So we'll see how that goes on. But let's go ahead and get into some of these games, Jarrell, and we'll go by them pretty quickly because we do want to get to some of those fan questions that were submitted last night. So plenty to discuss here, but it starts on Thursday night. The Rams at the Seahawks. Both teams are 3-1, a pair of NFC West foes. They're going to kick off in the Pacific Northwest at 8:20 p.m. Eastern time. The Rams are coming off a surprising 55-40 loss to the Bucks in Jameis Winston. And Seattle, on the other hand, beat the Cardinals 27-10 in dominant fashion in Arizona. So now they're returning home to CenturyLink. Who do you have winning this game, Jarrell, and why?
I have the Rams coming up to Seattle and getting a win in a shootout. Over the last couple years, each team has averaged over 30 points per game in this matchup. I don't think it's going to be any different in this matchup upcoming. I think that Jared Goff is going to be throwing the ball a lot, as he threw for over 60 attempts last week. I think that him limiting turnovers is going to be the key in order for them to be successful. But also Todd Gurley, if they can get him to 15, 18 touches some way, somehow, I think this team is going to have an opportunity to be successful. And I think their defense is going to have an opportunity to make some plays. I know Russell Wilson doesn't make a lot of mistakes, but they're going to get back on track. Big time game, division game. Aaron Donald comes out to dominate, and I don't see anybody on the Seattle's offensive line that has an ability to stop him. So I have the Rams winning this one 37-34.
Okay, I'm going to oppose you on this one. I'm going to take the home team, the Seattle Seahawks, for the very reason of the Rams and their inability to get their rushing attack going. The Rams this season, they are ranked 22nd, averaging 99.8 yards on the ground. Todd Gurley has been abysmal, to say the least. 219 yards on 49 carries. Of course, he's got a 4.5 yards per carry average and 3 touchdowns. But his best performance came in week 1 against Carolina when he rushed for 97 yards. But since then, Jarrell, week 2, 16 carries, 63 yards and a touchdown. Week 3, 14 carries, 43 yards. And then week 4, 5 carries for 16 yards. And I know they've been without Austin Blythe, their starting offensive guard, but they're going to face a very tough Seattle front seven. Jadeveon Clowney, Ziggy Ansah, Puna Ford, and then KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner. I think this Seattle defense will be the difference. I can see situations where Jared Goff's going to be going to the air quite a bit because they are going to be unable to get Todd Gurley going on the ground. But Russell Wilson at home, he is playing at a superb level right now, and he's not getting a lot of talk, and it's kind of crazy and baffling because he's putting together an MVP season for the Seattle Seahawks. I think he gets the job done, connects with his boy Tyler Lockett on a couple of long touchdown strikes, and this Rams secondary is banged up as well. Taylor Rapp and then Marcus Peters, who's in concussion protocol, so his availability is still up in the air. Give me the Seahawks 27-23 in a close one, but I give the home team the slight advantage in this one.
We differ on that, man, but it's going to be an exciting game. As I said, the last couple of years has been over 30 points per game in each of the last couple of matchups. So I'm excited to see what these offenses can do. But I'm also excited to see what these defensive linemen can do, man. There's great pass rushers on both sides of the ball, so we'll see what happens.
All right, now let's go on to the rest of Week 5's matchups. We'll roll on here pretty quickly. So the Jaguars at the Carolina Panthers, both teams are 2-2. Kyle Allen, Gardner Minshew, who would have thought we were going to see this quarterback matchup? I'm going to roll with the Panthers 20-17. I think Kyle Allen's got some things going, and Christian McCaffrey is sensational in his ability to light up defenses. I'm taking Carolina by 3.
Man, I have the Panthers going 24-13. They have the number one ranked passing defense. I think they're going to make the day hard for Gardner Minshew. But Kyle Allen, man, 3-0, six touchdowns, no interceptions. Man, he's having the Panthers team feeling themselves, and obviously Christian McCaffrey doing his thing week in and week out. He's starting to look like the Reggie Bush of the NFL. And so at the end of the day, man, it's going to be exciting to see. I have the Panthers 24-13.
Patriots 4-0 on the road to the nation's capital to take on the 0-4 Redskins. Man, it's been a brutal season for Washington up to this point. Jay Gruden has yet to name a starter. It could be Dwayne Haskins. It could be Keenum. It could be Colt McCoy, who's coming back from injury. Give me the Patriots in a beatdown 30-10. New England, those guys are just playing at an unbelievable level, and it's not surprising. Bill Belichick has that team firing on all cylinders. Too much for Washington and a team that has been through some turmoil early in this season. Pats, 30-10.
We would have to agree on it. I'm slightly off as far as the prediction score. I have the Pats winning 30-7. I think that Dwayne Haskins definitely needs to be the quarterback. I mean, if you want to see what a guy has to do, you have to put him out there. But I didn't think last week was the best opportunity. I think you give him a 4 week of preparation. But the Patriots are firing on all cylinders, being the number one defense in points per game. So 30-7 Pats.
Here's a good matchup right here, Jarrell. The Bills, 3-1. At the Titans, 2-2. This is an AFC clash that could have some playoff implications down the road as far as the wild card picture. I have the Titans winning a very close game, 24-20 at home. The Bills, they almost took down the Patriots. Unfortunately, they lost Josh Allen to that concussion late in the game, and Matt Barkley was forced into the ball game. But right now, the Titans, they're kind of up and down. One week, they look like contenders, and next week, they're flat. Obviously, last week coming off a big win in Atlanta, I think Marcus Mariota continues his hot streak. This defense pass rush with Cam Wake and Harold Landry come to life. Give me the Titans 24-20.
See, that's where I'm going to have to disagree. I got the Bills coming in winning 18-10. I think it's going to be a slugfest defensively. We definitely don't know what Josh Allen's going to do, having been in concussion protocol. But my man Frank Gore moving into fourth all-time on the rushing list, having an opportunity to continue to bolster his career and his stats. I think they're going to be trying to obviously spoon-feed him every which way, man. They're going to give him an opportunity to touch the football. The second-best defense in the league, man, I have the Bills on the road 18-10, shutting down A.J. Brown and this Mariota offense.
To the AFC North we go. The 2-2 Ravens taking on the 1-3 Steelers. The Steelers finally getting their first win on Monday night against a very atrocious Bengals team that put, I think, the entire nation to sleep. That game was very boring. But now we're in Pittsburgh. This is a big game for the Steelers because they know a win can get them tied atop that division. I don't see it happening personally. I think Baltimore, they're going to come back angry. They're going to bounce back. 27-17, Lamar Jackson, I feel like he's going to dice up Pittsburgh secondary that has been very weak at times, although Minka Fitzpatrick is there and he's been able to play at a good level there. I just think Baltimore is a more complete team, so I give him a 10-point victory on the road.
I, too, have Baltimore winning 27-17. I think they got embarrassed last week. You know, obviously the absence of Brandon Williams in the middle, having a big guy like that to be able to fill the void was crucial last week for the Browns and their success on the ground with Nick Chubb. And so I think Lamar Jackson's going to have to start throwing for some touchdowns. He's been running for some, and you know, obviously they've been doing good on the ground rushing. But I think that the Steelers have a very tough matchup coming with Baltimore, and I think Baltimore gets back on track 27-17.
A matchup of winless teams, the Cardinals 0-3-1 going to Cincinnati to take on the 0-4 Bengals. I have Arizona winning 28-21. Kyler Murray, this is the game where I think he's going to pass for four touchdowns against that Bengals secondary that looks clueless week in and week out. Man, I don't know if I've seen an NFL team have as many blown coverages as the Bengals. Look for the Cardinals to get their first victory, for Cliff Kingsbury and for Kyler Murray to have a big day through the air.
Yeah, it's time for Kyler Murray to really showcase his skills. I think this is going to be like a 7-on-7 type of ordeal. And so I definitely have the Cardinals coming in winning 21-13. I think that Kyler Murray is going to light it up offensively as far as the yards. Hopefully, Larry Fitzgerald has the opportunity to go over 100 yards against this defense, man. And so it'll be a phenomenal to see. And so I have the Cards winning 21-13.
Now a game that could put some pressure, as we've already talked about, Dan Quinn, but Bill O'Brien, he's got a lot of people in that Texans organization and fan base starting to question his play calling and their slow start considering the talent they have. So this game could have some implications as far as head coaches and maybe the loss of a job. So the 1-3 Falcons going to Texas, taking on the Texans who are 2-2. This is going to be a very close game, and I had a tough time picking a winner, but I'm going to give it to the Falcons. Just under pure desperation, they're 1-3. They understand the circumstances that the Saints are running away with this division. The Panthers and the Bucks are playing some good ball as well. I think Atlanta finds ways to move the ball offensively, get Julio Jones involved early after a dud performance in week 4. Give me the Falcons 26-23 over the Texans.
I would have to disagree with you. I have the Texans winning 24-20. I think Deshaun Watson is going to be just what the Texans need in order for them to be successful. DeAndre Hopkins, I think he's going to have a phenomenal game. Their defense, man, is just really terrible. And I just think Atlanta is not going to be able to keep up with the scoring. You know, they're going to have some turnovers when it comes to, you know, J.J. Watt and against Matt Ryan. I think that it's going to be phenomenal to see. So I have the Texans winning 24-20.
All right, Vikings at the Giants. Both teams at 2-2. Vikings yet again taking a road trip. The Giants, Daniel Jones, no Saquon Barkley again this week. I have the Vikings pulling out a very low-scoring game, 19-14 over the Giants. This is a performance where I can see Minnesota's defense scoring on a pick six or a fumble return for a touchdown. I think they're going to make life very hard on Daniel Jones. They'll try to shut down the run game entirely with Wayne Goldman there, and they're going to force Daniel Jones into a couple of turnovers. So give me the Vikes, 19-14.
I, too, have the Vikes winning. I have them winning 24-18. I think that this is the game that Kirk Cousins have an opportunity to get back on track. You're going against a Giants team that, you know, obviously is playing with a little bit more sense of desperation, you know, behind Daniel Jones. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think that they have the opportunity to keep up with this Vikings team offensively or defensively. And so I think that this is the chance that Kirk Cousins finds his confidence. He finds confidence in the offense and the passing game. And I have them winning 24-18.
All right, Bears at Raiders. This is a revenge game for Khalil Mack. He's even said it himself. He's looking forward to taking on his old team. This is going to be a field goal affair, Jarrell. I don't know if there's going to be very much offense, especially Mitch Trubisky. Unlikely to play, although Chase Daniel actually looked pretty darn good. I just don't see a whole ton of fireworks. So give me the Bears 16-13 in a very low-scoring game. And Khalil Mack, I think he's going to put together a dominant performance with a couple of sacks, a couple of turnovers on Derek Carr, who's been a little bit hesitant inside the pocket. That's the difference. Chicago by 3, 16-13.
Man, you're not giving my man Chase Daniel enough credit, man. I think Chase Daniel's a phenomenal quarterback. Every time he's had opportunity to go out there, he's produced well over 200 yards passing. He's had opportunities to score touchdowns and leading off and leading the team. You know, with his height, everything, everybody kind of judges that, but he has the ability to put points on the board. He comes from an Andy Reid scheme. He knows the entire offense front and back. So Matt Nagy will definitely not have to drop off when it comes to play calling or anything scheme wise. So I actually have the Bears winning 24-9. I think that Khalil Mack is going to come out and dominate. I have him written down for 4 sacks. And looking literally John Gruden and all those guys right in the face, letting them know that what they could have had moving forward to that Las Vegas stadium. And so I think the Bears are going to win 24-9.
On we go to the 0-3 Jets taking on the 2-2 Philadelphia Eagles in the city of brotherly love. The Jets coming off their bye week. It's been ugly for them. They're hoping to get Sam Darnold back in the lineup, who's missed the last couple of weeks with mono. I honestly don't think it matters whether Darnold plays or not. I think the Eagles are going to win this game. Carson Wentz has looked very sharp. A lot of people have been questioning his durability. But that offensive line, Jarrell, they really turned some heads against Green Bay and the dominant performance they had, opening up gaping holes for Jordan Howard. I look for them to do the same against the New York Jets front. That's probably going to be without Quinnen Williams again, and CJ Mosley is not looking likely to play either. So two big losses yet again for Adam Gase's side. Eagles 27-13.
I have the Eagles winning 28-3. I think they're going to dominate this Jets offense. We just haven't seen enough from them offensively week in and week out to give me any confidence that they're going to make any type of strides. Even with Sam Darnold having the possibility of returning, I think the Eagles are going to dominate them. They're starting to feel themselves a little bit. Anytime you have a chance to go into Green Bay and you win against a Aaron Rodgers and the way this offense has been playing, You're definitely going to be feeling yourself coming into the next week. And so I think the Eagles have opportunity at home to dominate 28-3.
Next matchup here, the 0-4 Broncos at the 2-2 Chargers. Who do you have taking this one?
I have Chargers 30-13. Bradley Chubb being out hurts the Broncos defense even more. And they haven't had the opportunity to stop anybody defensively this year under Vic Fangio. So I have the Chargers 30-13.
Yes, I have the Chargers as well. Unfortunate, Bradley Chubb done for the season with a partially torn ACL. The Chargers, they understand that in order to even stay within reach of the Chiefs in that AFC West, they need a stack wins. They're dealing with a lot of injuries, but I still like them to get the job done. 31-20 over Denver. On we go to the next one. This is a big one. America's Game of the Week, 4:25 p.m. Eastern Time. The Dallas Cowboys taking on the Green Bay Packers in Arlington, Texas. Jarrell, I already know who you're going with, but I want to hear your reasoning so I can disagree with you. So go ahead and give me why the Cheeseheads are going to win.
Man, I got the Cheeseheads because I got Aaron Rodgers. I got his dominance over Dallas. His ability to push the ball down the field. I think that the Saints opened up the formula last week into stopping this Dallas offense, and I think that the Green Bay Packers are definitely going to try to mimic the same things this week. I think that they're going to have an opportunity to come back and get right back on track after, you know, having a disappointing loss last week to Philadelphia. So I have Aaron Rodgers, man, coming through big time. He threw that interception in the red zone last week. It hurt that offense and their chances to win. And so I'm telling you, he's got a big chip on his shoulder this week, and I look for him to put up at least 400 yards passing against this Dallas defense.
What's the score line?
Man, I have him 34-28 in the shootout.
No, man, I'm going to roll with the Dallas Cowboys. I understand Aaron Rodgers has been the sheriff in Dallas, Texas the last, what, 3 or 4 years. He's gone into AT&T Stadium, and he has taken the hearts out of the Dallas Cowboys faithful time and time again. I look for this matchup to be another nail biter for both sides. It's going to be a very entertaining game, but I think the Cowboys will find a way to win, and I think it's because of their run game that they're going to be able to establish and dominate time of possession. The Saints completely shut down Ezekiel Elliott in that rushing attack, and so credit to them, but we all saw Green Bay's rush defense and how awful they were against Philadelphia, and I look for this Cowboys offense to expose that, which is going to open up play-action passing for Dak Prescott, and give me the Cowboys 27-24 with a game-winning field goal off the leg of Brett Maher, so the Cowboys return the favor of a ruthless field goal victory over those Green Bay Packers, but it definitely is going to be a fun one to watch.
Absolutely, man. I definitely have my popcorn ready for this one. I'm going to be right at the TV, have an opportunity to watch it. I think that Aaron Rodgers and this team is going to light it up, as well as Dak Prescott and Zeke, man. I think they're going to have opportunities to score a lot of points as well. So it's going to be a great game to see, bro.
I'm sure you and I are going to have some fun exchanges throughout the game. So looking forward to that, man. But we got two more games on the slate. Primetime games, Colts at the Chiefs, Indianapolis 2-2, Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs team, they're rolling 4-0. This is a Sunday night showdown. The Chiefs are way too much at this point, especially they're at Arrowhead. And Indianapolis, as I mentioned earlier, they're still dealing with some injuries to that defense. Malik Hooker is going to be a big loss for them if he doesn't play, considering the vertical attack that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes use. I think they take it 34-23 over Indianapolis.
I have the Chiefs winning big, 33-20. I think that they're just going to be too much. They kind of got their selves tested last week with their visit to Detroit, but they had an opportunity to win that game and on an extraordinary play with Travis Kelce and Shady McCoy, and so I think that they're going to have a big confidence coming into this week. And, you know, obviously with the injuries that Indianapolis is dealing with, I think there's going to be too much. So the Chiefs 33-20.
And the final game of week number 5, it's Monday night. We got the Browns 2-2 going to San Francisco to take on the unbeaten 49ers in Kyle Shanahan's squad. They're 3-0 coming off that bye. I have the Niners winning this one, Jarrell. This Niners defense, they are no joke. DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, Quan Alexander, Richard Sherman playing at a high level as well. I think this front seven, they're going to get after a Browns offensive line that's already shown some of their flaws early in this season. I know Nick Chubb's coming off a big-time performance, but look for those lanes to be closed going up against a daunting defensive front, who I haven't even mentioned, Nick Bosa, who's also a very big-time athletic coming off the edge. So give me the Niners taking this one by a score of 26-17 over the Browns.
Ah, you got the Niners staying undefeated. I think that the Browns are going to come in and have an opportunity to win this game, man. I think that, you know, with them getting over the hump last week with their division foe, playing against a phenomenal defense on the road and showcasing what they did offensively, I think that Baker Mayfield is going to find a way to figure it out. They have too many weapons offensively in order for this defense to stop them, and as far as the pass coverage is concerned. Richard Sherman can't guard, you know, both OBJ and both Jarvis Landry, and he was able to get rolling last week. So I have the Browns in prime time going out there winning 31-24.
All right, so that does it. Now, as promised, we have a couple of questions that were asked by some listeners that we're going to get to before we close out today's episode. And so we'll go ahead and give quick answers to these so we can get through these. But Sam wants to know, do you guys think that the Giants are legit following their last two victories? So, Drew, I'll let you answer that one first, and I'll give my answer.
I don't think that the Giants are legit this year. I think that they're playing with an awesome amount of pride. I think that they believe in Daniel Jones a lot. And anytime you have an opportunity to change things up in the organization for the betterment of the team, and it's always going to give guys a lot of confidence week in and week out. I just don't think that they have the personnel to be able to contend with the rest of the NFL. on a week to week basis. And I just think that the Giants are playing on a very extreme high right now. But as teams start to get more film on Daniel Jones, it's going to become tougher for them to score points. And so I just think the Giants are definitely just riding it high at the moment.
I agree with that. I don't think they're legit yet. I do think that there's bright future ahead with them with Daniel Jones there. They're 2-2. They lost to the Cowboys and Buffalo Bills with Eli Manning. And then since they made that change to Daniel Jones, they had that big epic comeback against Tampa Bay and then just completely steamrolled the Redskins, 24-23. But their schedule, Jarrell, four of their next five games, they have to play the Vikings, the Patriots, the Lions, and the Cowboys. So tough schedule. Their defense is still very leaky. They rank 25th in total defense. That secondary is too big of a liability. So they're not legit this season, but they will be in the coming years. So how about this one? This is a very interesting question, and I think it's worth putting some attention to it, Jarrell. Michael Santiago wants to know, do we think Jameis Winston can go to the Pro Bowl this season?
Absolutely. I think that he has an opportunity to do great things under the arm of Bruce Arians. He's finally starting to find his groove. The display that he put on last week versus the Rams and, being on the road against that pass rush that's known to get after quarterbacks, and as well as the Rams having both of their starting corners in the game. Tlaib had a terrible game last week, and he's known for being the physical guy last week, and Marcus Peters as well, and now he's in concussion protocol. But what they've been able to do offensively, it's phenomenal. And so I think that he has to limit his turnovers. If his touchdown to interception ratio can change, then he definitely has the opportunity to make the Pro Bowl.
I agree with that. I do believe Winston can get there as well. As you mentioned, coming off that big-time performance, 28-41 for 385, four touchdowns to one interception against that stingy Rams defense. Now, you look at him overall, Jarrell, fifth in pass yards with 1,167 yards, nine touchdowns. Of course, the interceptions have been his Achilles heel. He's got five this season, 62.6 completion percentage. Bruce Arians clearly is pressing the right buttons, and Byron Leftwich, who's the offensive coordinator. So I do think Winston is very capable of getting into the Pro Bowl and taking this Tampa Bay Bucs team to who knows how far, but they do have the talent. They could be a sneaky team as playoffs come later into the year. Now, for the final question, which I really think is a pretty good question to get us thinking a little bit, Jarrell, Andy wants to know, outside of Patrick Mahomes, which young quarterback would you most want to build a team around?
That's a tough one. There's a few good quarterbacks that I really think that are coming a long way. Number one being Lamar Jackson, as well as Jared Goff. I think that the system that they have in L.A. is really giving them confidence in order to make plays. I think that he has to limit his turnover ratio as well, and I think that he has to improve in tough situations against third and long and big pressure situations. But I like Lamar Jackson. I love what he's been able to do with this Baltimore offense and the confidence that they've been able to play with. But he has to be able to score touchdowns through the air and not just with his feet. If he has opportunity to collect touchdowns through the air just as well as he is on the ground, then Baltimore has a great opportunity to have the quarterback of the future. And I think that he is definitely the guy that I'm very interested to keep an eye on over the next couple seasons.
For me, the young quarterback that I'd most want to build around, of course, not considering Mahomes, is Deshaun Watson from the Texans. I know he struggled at times getting rid of the ball, taking too many sacks, but Houston's offensive line has not done him any favors. And he's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. He put together some strong first couple seasons in the league. His football IQ is off the charts. And one thing with Deshaun Watson is he's just a pure winner. He did it at Clemson, knocked off Alabama in the national championship. And he has a good way of leading his team. You can tell the whole locker room buys into his vision and his direction. And he's got a very strong arm. He can make plays down the field. Of course, he needs to improve his accuracy. He missed on a couple of long balls last week, which did result into their loss. But nonetheless, I do like Watson's upside, and I think he's only going to continue to develop into one of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yes, he has phenomenal talent. His IQ is definitely off the charts. You know, obviously it was displayed a couple days ago in his interview, his post-game interview. And he's a bright young man. He has opportunity to go very far. I think the Texans have to do him the justice of spending the money up front in order for him to have continued success. But as long as him and DeAndre Hopkins have opportunity to be on the same team together, then this team is going to go far.
So there you have it. That's the end of this week's podcast. We got to some fan questions, broke down the matchups, and did some fact fiction for y'all. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be right back next Wednesday to recap Week 5, preview Week 6. Again, Jarrell, thanks for taking the time to join me. Looking forward to watching some excellent, exciting football games.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be a great weekend for some football, college football. We take on Ohio State, being that is in Michigan State, so go green. I'm very excited for my boys up there in East Lansing, as well as the Cheeseheads going against Dallas this weekend, man. So
come on, go, man.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Go green all the way, whether it's NFL or whether it's college football, man. So I'm excited to see my guys compete this week.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'll definitely be watching that Michigan State-Ohio State game, because I'll tell you what, Jarrell, they sure took the Huskers to the woodshed and put a beating on them last week, so that was pretty ugly to watch. So we'll see if Michigan State can give them a tougher game. But again, I appreciate your time, man, and I enjoy picking your brain as an NFL player, so I think it gives our listeners a good view and understanding of what it's like coming from a player who's been around the game and all these players. So again, big thanks to you, man.
Thank you again, man. And as always, it's a pleasure to be able to share the podcast with you and give my take on teams and players and whatnot. And so fans, continue to keep writing your questions and continue to keep asking for great content, because we really do appreciate it.
Blessings. Take care. And we'll touch base next week.
All right, bro. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.